You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Southern Peanut Growers, committed to making sustainable more attainable for chefs and cooking enthusiasts worldwide.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila, delicious and smooth tequila, meaning harmony with the earth. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce.
Today, I'm speaking with Haley Swartz, co-founder and co-CEO of Actual Veggies, the chef-crafted real veggie burger, popping up in retailers across the U.S. Actual Veggies is bucking the plant-based meat trend with good old-fashioned veggies, not isolated soy or pea protein, and can be found at Wegmans, The Fresh Market, Plum Market, and on Imperfect Foods, Hungry Root, Sun Basket, and Fresh Direct. And I think a bunch more coming up in the next couple months, but we'll talk about that. Welcome, Haley.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm so happy you're here. I was just talking to Maddie, our brand manager, and she was saying how much fun it was working with your team on our partnership. So I thought I would tell you that right off the bat.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
we love working with you. We go together very nicely.
I know. I love the sauces.
Okay, so we're going to talk about a bunch of things. I'm really, you know, the most interesting thing to me here. I mean, obviously, it's a great product, cool story, all of that. But what I really want to get into is the merchandising piece, because I think it is more of a hang up for emerging brands than they even know it's going to be. And I can sort of speak from experience, and I think you can too. But before we get into any of that, I just want to hear how Actual Veggies became actual.
Sure.
What happened?
Sure. So just a little bit about me. Again, I'm Haley Swartz, and I'm a co-founder and co-CEO. I started my career in tech. I worked at AOL, then I worked for a few startups, and then I went to Alibaba. After Alibaba, I was meeting all these entrepreneurs and small businesses who were taking their idea from a small idea and making it into a reality, and that looked like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I wanted to do something myself. I love eating healthy. I love whole foods. And, you know, I wanted something tangible. So in November 2019, I went to lunch with my friend Jason Rosenbaum, my now co-founder and co-CEO. Mm-hmm. And basically, he had told me that he had stopped eating meat for health reasons. In all transparency, I do eat meat. I did eat meat, and I continue to
eat meat.
Yes. But he told me that he had stopped eating meat for health reasons and convinced me to eat a veggie burger with him at a restaurant. I always have loved a good veggie burger. So this wasn't a problem. Like, there's something delightful and enjoyable about eating a veggie burger in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And we got this veggie burger, and we started talking about how you really couldn't get a good veggie burger at the grocery store. Yes, you could get a ton of products that tasted like meat, but on the traditional veggie burger side, there was a product that really hadn't been innovated on 20 plus years.
Yeah, they're like the frozen discs, basically.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. The hockey pucks that we like to call them. And so we basically, you know, this seemed too obvious. Like, there has to be a reason why you can enjoy a delicious and delightful veggie burger at the restaurant, but you can't get one in the grocery store. And if there wasn't one, there had to be a reason why it didn't exist. And really, like, we didn't find a good enough one. Mm-hmm. And so basically, we started toying around with the idea, and there were some core components of that. We wanted it to be obviously delicious. We wanted it to be an enjoyable experience around the veggie burger. We also wanted it to be really clean and celebrate the veggies that were in it. And then we also wanted it to be filling. We wanted you to feel that satisfied feeling that you feel when you eat a real burger, but not that sick feeling when you eat a real burger sometimes.
So question about this, because this is all happening with some real context of the Impossibles and the Beyonds and all of the plant-based proteins. And it's almost like the two of you were having this, that conversation could have been in 1982, 1992, 2012. But it's interesting that you had the conversation within the context of this other thing that's happening in the quote unquote plant-based protein world, whatever you think of it or don't. Was that part of the thought process at all? Like, were you thinking about that when you were also thinking about, because it's interesting timing in a way, you know?
Yeah. What we will always be thankful to Beyond and Impossible for doing is educating the consumer of the importance of eating less meat and eating more vegetables for the environment. The number one reason that people are doing that is for health. So I think before 2019, 20, you know, whenever those years that all blend together for us people didn't really think eating a veggie, you know, first diet was a big thing. And now, you know, you look around and everyone, whether they're a vegan or a meat eater, is trying to eat more veggies.
More
and
vegetables.
So that's really... that education piece is integral in helping us think through this opportunity.
Yeah, got it. Okay. So then you were like, you looked around for reasons not to do it, and then you decided to do it.
Right. And yeah, and you know, what was really important was that, like, you know, you look at the recipes online to make a veggie burger at home, and they all are really clean. They're really good. But what's most important that we knew that was going to be that important to our customers is to make sure it didn't fall apart. And, you know, so while there's no innovation in the science and the technology, it's all clean ingredients. What we needed was a chef that can make a veggie burger that could be mass produced and manufactured and was made with clean ingredients, but also didn't fall apart. Because there's something about an experience when your food that comes packaged doesn't stay the way it's supposed to be. That's sort of disconcerting. So that was what we spent 2020 doing, is working with a chef, working with consultants who are great at taking a product from a chef to a manufacturer to make that into something that's using only natural ingredients as glues, as binders to keep things together.
Yep. And so were you, I mean, obviously that was going on the R&D side. Were you starting to think about, you know, market and sales and where you wanted to sell it? And did you, you know, I mean, it's interesting. It's refrigerated, although I think it can be frozen. Thoughts about that, thoughts about the branding, messaging, like how did you divide and conquer? And what were some key kind of learnings for you as you were in this 2020 mode?
Yeah. So I think at first, we actually thought we were going to bring this product into market as D2C. And my co-founder, Jason, was adamant, you know, and D2C was exploding. And it was so important that, like, that's the way we're going to grow. And that's where we're going to get brand equity. Really quickly, we learned that doing D2C is not as easy as anyone thinks. And especially if you're shipping a product frozen or refrigerated, it's expensive. So that was like the first pivot that we had to do. And with that, you know, really thinking about what that experience would be at the grocery store and how we were going to get it into the grocery store as quickly as possible.
So that's interesting. Let's talk about that a little bit, because, you know, I also feel like, you know, we're refrigerated, obviously. It was not an option to us, really, to be a digitally native company. Not only that, but like I am a grocery store gal, and this was 2018 and I loved Whole Foods. So, but I will say that when I was doing my initial fundraise, after we had a little bit of traction, I would say 70% of at least the more institutional investors I talked to at that time in 2019, wouldn't even look at the company because they just didn't want to do just straight up grocery. They wanted it to have, now I think that's shifted from D2C into more like, where's your digital, what are you doing digitally, like in the digital world? Then it was very much like they kind of had given up on traditional wholesale grocery because of all the reasons why people did, you know, sort of disrupt that system. But it just never really worked for a cold supply chain just because of the shipping at the end of the day. And now it seems like it's not really working so much or as well for ambient either, because the days of, you know, Instagram third-party data and, you know, the CAC, you know, sort of relative to, you know, your average order, et cetera, seems to have just shifted dramatically. But it sounds like you guys were kind of building this in the middle of all of that. So what became obvious to you? Like, was it just like the cost of shipping, or was it like, wait a second, it's actually really expensive to acquire a single consumer. We're better off just doing this at a retailer and we can spend money there to like do a little couponing and get people to try it.
Yeah. So we always worked from a margin perspective and mm-hmm. we immediately realized that we would not be able to make money even without like acquisition. Like this is just, you know, from shipping frozen, the cost is so expensive, especially during 2020, you know, there mm-hmm. was delays with shipping, product was not you couldn't rely on FedEx or UPS to get products to the customer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just, this is when we did talk to partners who looked like they were killing it in D2C, but really,
their sales might've been,
but when you talk to a salesperson, a head of sales who was inside a company that was focusing on D2C, there are sort of these like rumblings and warnings that, you know, this might not be the biggest part of our business, or we're pivoting to do more of this instead. What I'm really proud of our team for doing is always sticking to the fact that, hey, you know, we might not need to be, you know, so profitable at the beginning, but mm-hmm. we need to see a path to profitability.
Right.
And with doing D2C, that's not an option. It's also super wasteful with how you ship it. And then there's also, which I know you've talked on the podcast about before, this really great middle ground around digital experiences that we've leveraged really well, which is working with our online grocery stores. Yeah. And shipping to them and letting yep. them handle the D2C logistics in a more economical yep. and sustainable route.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's interesting to see, you know, someone I know, just someone who orders groceries online. We were just talking and she was just saying that, you know, she used a particular online food retailer religiously during COVID and now is like not there quite as often and running out to her bodega more and, you know, going out more. And I'm just thinking about them, like, you know, I have like their kind of, you know, business model in my head and thinking like the adjustments that they must have had to make to ramp up, to keep all of these people happy and fed. I mean, you look at like Imperfect, right? They skyrocketed trying to fulfill demand. And of course, I mean, of course that demand has to shift a little bit in down, you know? I mean, and so how do you build a company that can handle crazy volume at a really important time, but not be sort of susceptible? I mean, even Peloton, right?
Right, like exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking of as you said that.
Like, I don't know. I feel for a lot of the companies because it looks like they missed the ball a little bit, but they, I mean, how do you do it? I don't even know. So I agree. I mean, I think for us building stuff, you know, partnering with those companies and letting them do what they do well and letting us do the brand building, you know, seems to be the right path. And so how did you, so once you realized that D2C wasn't necessarily, you know, the place where you were going to build this to what you wanted to build it to, how did you start going out and looking for retailers?
Sure. So we definitely went big, fast. And, you know, I know that's not always how people do things, but we were really good at as a team of always just not letting things stop us from showing our capabilities. So like what I mean by that is, for example, we were shipping samples before we had our trays, before our manufacturer like had our trays and was like, before they were like sealing our trays, that we instead, don't tell anyone this, except I'm telling everyone this. So we went to the grocery store, we got Beyond trays, so we cleaned them out super well.
Right, and then put yours in.
And put our burgers in, we resealed them, we sent them as samples to grocery stores that we wanted to work with. So we were never saying, oh, we might not have the capacity to serve you. We always were planning that, knowing in the future or that we would be ready and never saying no to opportunity. Right. We had a really great launch in January 2021 on QVC. So it's sort of in this in-between world that was unique in the sense that obviously QVC is one of those online marketplaces that you work with, but also it's a great marketing engine for us. It was a great opportunity to have an order for our co-packer that was large enough to for them to take us seriously. And at the same time, be a marketing opportunity to drive awareness to a huge amount of customers.
I think that's amazing. It's funny because it does. I mean, that's such a good point that you bring up. You know, number one is everyone talks about, you know, start small, core, then more. And that is true. And I think you see that play out a lot. The problem with that is that you need to have money to enable you to be patient.
Right.
And that's not always the best. You know, you want to get some revenue in there pretty quickly, which sounds like, you know, is exactly how you guys played it. But I think even more what we talk about on this show is the co-packers and the manufacturers and getting kicked off of lines and not being big enough and people not taking you seriously and all of those issues, because it's never been easier to come up with a formula and go to a co-man and say like, hey, look, I have a great brand and I have, you know, this cool idea. But it's also never been more competitive for line time. And then you couple that with labor shortages and people being sick, unfortunately, and they had to really be careful with who they were putting on their lines. So this is a great point for people that the QVC thing was a great way to not only sort of build awareness, but to get that jumpstart at the co-packer to get those, you know, minimum orders and to show that you can drive that volume right out of the gate. And so you're just like putting a stake in the ground.
Exactly.
We're going to take a little break because when we come back, you're actually my first guest who launched on QVC out of 159. So I would like to talk more about QVC, but we're going to take a break and then come back and do that.
This episode is proudly supported by Southern Peanut Growers, who are spreading the word about peanut sustainability. As the planet's resources are strained to meet the nutritional needs of its populations, many responsible chefs are doing their part by sourcing local and sustainably raised food. Many are surprised to learn that peanuts are one of the most sustainable plant-based proteins available. Southern Peanut Growers created the campaign Making Sustainable More Attainable in partnership with award-winning chef Steven Satterfield. Together, they're bringing the sustainability message to chefs nationwide, whether it's conserving water, minimizing fertilizers, or achieving zero waste, peanuts are a logical choice for your next menu. Southern Peanut Growers represent farmers across Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama. For more information, visit www.peanutbutterlovers.com.
I'm Chava Periban, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainably managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
I'm back with Haley Swartz from Actual Veggies. Okay, so we're talking about QVC. I'd love to just hear your thoughts. I've heard it can be very expensive. I've heard it's not necessarily a target demographic for a premium, sort of modern brand. I've heard it's amazing and that, you get a ton of orders pretty quickly. Just tell me about your experience in general. Anyone who's thinking about doing it, what kind of wisdom you can share, just go for it.
Sure. So this is definitely not somewhere you're going to make a ton of money on from like a profitability standpoint. Mm-hmm. Revenue numbers can be quite high actually, but the way I think about it is somewhere between, I think it's around 4 million people are watching QVC. And if I can break even and get in front of 4 million people and talk about my brand. Let's just say someone said, I can do a commercial for you for, 10 minutes and you had to pay $0.
Yep.
And, this is any brand's dream to get in front of, I don't care who they are, but if you're getting in front of 4 million people and you get to talk for 10 minutes about your product to a very highly engaged audience, why wouldn't you do it?
Right.
We're spending money on influencer campaigns. We're spending money on ads and in-store promos. And, when I say all of us CPG brands, why wouldn't you do something where you're basically, either going to make a little or break even?
Right.
So I think it's a wonderful experience. I also think, you're getting in front of middle America moms who are big in their community, who are going to talk about your brand, who are going to be excited about it and have that chance to speak to, just a large amount of people that you usually aren't in front of. And that's, I don't see how you would say no to that opportunity.
And so question, because a lot of times we talk about things like out of home, like billboards and truck wraps and things like that. And one of the things that we always talk about is like building our in-store map a little bit more before we do stuff like that, where we're putting fuel on a fire, because where are they going to go to get their second batch?
Yep.
So, I'm thinking, is there any way were you able to track those QVC consumers? Do they come directly to your website after that? Is there any part of you that's like, I wish we had been in Kroger or Target or whatever when we did it, so that they would then be able to go see it in their grocery store after they finished the one that they bought on QVC? Or are you just like, nah, it's fine, because it just gave us a good jump start and we'll do it again when we do have that ACV?
So I completely agree. Like, I think you need to have multiple touch points when you're talking about how to drive awareness and then drive purchase of your brand. And so I still think the powers of QVC is not completely unleashed. So right now, you know, we don't we're about to have complete like national distribution, where I think that most of our core customers will have a way to get our burgers in the grocery store. And that's when I'm going to be banging on QVC doors, stores and saying, you know, can I come on? I'll be on next week.
Can we do it together? Can you talk about your burgers and I'll sauce them? I would love split the costs.
There we go. There we go.
Done.
So, yeah. So, you know, like I said, the first few ones were about, you know, there's different goals. Like one was making sure that we can get our, what's the word? The kinks? Ironed out. Is that the term? Yes.
Yep.
I'm like kinks. I've been like having trouble with my like little terms, kinks ironed out. And, you know, now it's like QVC is more and more effective as we have more and more distribution. And I completely agree. That's so like, some people are like, oh, once you have more distribution, are you going to stop? I'm like, no, like I said before, that's when I'm going to go even harder.
Yeah. And you fulfill that directly. So did you have a warehouse set up, so you had your co-packer and you had your 3PL and you were ready to just like the orders went directly from QVC to the 3PL?
Yes. So we do have a 3PL and we do have a way to buy our burgers online. Like I said, we just don't push that so hard.
Right.
But yeah, so our 3PL was set up there. My brother, who's my other co-founder, Alex Swartz, and Jason were both at the factory late at night helping ship those orders. I was the talent, so I acted as such. And
you're the show pony. workhorses.
So I chose to, you know, eat a fancy dinner while they were working hard that way. But
you did your job.
exactly. So
I think this brings up a larger point too, which is, you know, I think the difference between me a year ago or a year and a half ago and me now when it comes to sort of sales is they're just not all created equal and they play different purposes. And, you know, at the end of the day, some sales channels are not going to be as margin accretive, but they are going to be massive awareness builders like Costco. And, you know, they'll have other assets to them. You know, most people I know, although a couple are now coming out with better margins, most people I know are not making a ton of money. Their top line is huge at Costco, which enables them to get, you know, maybe some economies of scale, maybe again, more attention from the co-packer, et cetera. But they're not necessarily, the bottom line isn't phenomenal. And it does hit that overall, you know, gross margin. But it's also very much an awareness builder, and other stores look at Costco like, oh, huh, they were in Costco. They can handle big orders. You know, it gives you a little bit of like, you know, you've earned your stripes a little bit. And then there's some, you know, there are some accounts that are, they're just driving that revenue. They're just like sales on sales on sales. And I think establishing your goal for each one is almost more important than the number for each one. Kind of like anything, right?
Yep.
Like marketing channels too.
Exactly.
So it's like knowing what you're trying to get out of it is, that's the second line of thinking about each one of these things. And so you have done QVC justice. Because now there are definitely going to be people thinking about it.
Yeah.
Another, and this is kind of what I wanted to really talk about that I brought up at the beginning, because I think I find it so interesting because it's also something that we are playing with. So, you know, most veggie burgers, I think until you guys came on the scene, were just frozen and they were merchandised in the frozen set and that's where they were. And are. And you guys are playing around. I've seen you in some really cool sets where you are literally in the middle of the butcher case in between beef, ground lamb, impossible. You know, it's kind of interesting to see that. And I think that is, I mean, y'all tell me, but I feel like Beyond and Impossible did pave that way a little bit too. Like, yes, okay, there is a plant-based set now in a lot of these stores, but people aren't necessarily going to the plant-based set to buy their burger. So if they see you in the meat set, you know, in that butcher case, it's just a really great opportunity to say, hey, we're an alternative, and you don't have to like go over to the hippie set in the corner to find us. So tell me about your thinking there. You know, I remember very early on someone saying to me, who's your buyer? And I thought they meant like, who's buying it? And they were like, no, like, where are you going to be in the grocery store? And I didn't even know that there was, you know, I didn't know how it worked, and why would I? But, you know, we're in a couple of different sets in a couple of different places, and even from store to store in the same banner, we're in different places. So tell me how you guys approached it. Did you have someone who knew the world of grocery sales? You know, what advice were you given? What advice would you give?
Sure. So yeah, this is definitely an evolving question. And I think, you know, you had Andrea Rose on from Albertsons, mm-hmm. I remember. And I think what every grocery store, what I got from her and every grocery store is everyone's sort of still trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that's both on the buyer's point of view and, yeah. and ours. So what's really interesting is when Jason, my co-founder, I think I've said that like seven times that he's mm-hmm. my co-founder. We all know his name now. He was really good at understanding. He looked at data around velocities in different sections, which I think is sort of amazing that he thought to do that as a new brand, because mm-hmm. I would have never even known what a velocity was when we right. started. We also looked at where Beyond and Impossible was, because that is who we considered our competitor. Mm-hmm. And then we also looked at trends of how, and I guess this ties into velocities, but, you know, of fresh versus frozen, and what people's behaviors are around those two things. And right. what's interesting is that's all changing since COVID. Yeah. People, there's been a really big, there's a switch to feeling much more comfortable buying fresh food in the frozen aisle. Mm-hmm. I actually was just talking to my buyer at Kroger, and it's really, the frozen buyer has seen some great success in bringing natural and whole foods mm-hmm. to the freezer in a place that like buyers wouldn't in the past have thought that they could buy those kinds of foods in the freezer. Yep. There would be yep. more of a thought that that's the kind of place where you get ready to eat or like pre-packaged dinners. Right. But now people are thinking, hey, how can I shop, you know, for a little longer and keep things fresh? So mm-hmm. with that, we're basically in a live, like test and learn is what I like to say, is like, mm-hmm. I'm going to buyers and I'm saying, what do you think? Whether that's the meat buyer, whether that's the plant-based buyer in the produce section, whether that's the plant-based buyer who has a refrigerator, or mm-hmm. whether that's the frozen buyer. And I'm trying to understand what they're thinking about their sections. And I'm always asking where they're putting what we consider our competitors or our like products.
Right.
So it's actually turning into a really interesting experiment. Mm-hmm. And whereas at first we were saying, you know, we only want to be in the meat section, now we're really open to talking to buyers at each grocery store yeah. and saying, where do you think we belong? Yeah. And then how can we create creative experiences to support people coming to that section and finding our veggie burger.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, I think that conversation with Andrea was interesting for me because I don't know if my team listens to every episode, but literally the day before that, or I don't know, 2 days before that, I spoke to someone who had built a very big CPG brand and was just giving me her advice. And her advice was, people do not shop by attribute, they shop by occasion. So every time there's been a set in a grocery store that is the natural, quote unquote, set that started, it's gotten broken up now in most grocery stores across the country, where now those products aren't like in their own like weird kind of like wood paneled, you know, making you feel like you're in a health food store. in Montecito vibe in the middle of a grocery store. But now all of those things have gotten dispersed into almost like the generic or like the conventional sets. Mm-hmm. And her point was like, this too will pass. Like this plant-based set that has everything from like candy bars to sauce to jackfruit to you to kimchi to, you know, whatever, that's all going to, at some point, it's that catch-all is going to be, you know, dispersed. So her point was like, try to get to where you would be dispersed to. And so I was a little twirly, honestly, for a couple of days, because I was like, we need to go in with conviction. And, you know, we've been very much like, where do you think we belong? And it's very different at Whole Foods than it is at Stop and Shop. It's just different. And we've been sort of like, we have three different decks. We're ready to go into any of these different sets. We know the velocities for all of them. We're like, and I kind of came to my team and I'm like, people shop by occasion, not by attribute. And like, we've got to, you know, and that's why I asked the question on the podcast, because Andrea was like, actually, we're not seeing that in our data at all. We're right. seeing that this is a set where people are shopping. They want to know where they can find things that are more plant-based. And they don't want to do the deciphering in the dressings. They want to know which ones we've vetted for them as like, they kind of conflate plant-based with better for you and better for the world. And, you know, all of that is a whole different discussion. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I wish that I wasn't as twirly about it, because I feel like I want to know, and I want one space, and I want people to be able to go into every grocery store, and we're always next to the same thing, but we're just not.
Exactly.
And I don't think we're going to be for, I don't know, 3 to 5 years until there's something else that's like a dinner tonight or, you know, easy dinner kind of set that people have played with but hasn't really worked either. So are you finding that buyers are amenable to trying you next to things that maybe they haven't tried you next to before?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, we really are in every single section. Like, we're in mm-hmm. one store in Wegmans. We're in the freezer next to Beyond and Impossible and their freezer, which is actually going well. In Fresh Market, we're next to you.
Yeah.
And which is really fun. And then in Plum Market, we are in the meat section.
Right.
So with each section, there's also, there's pros and there's cons. So there's just things that you don't think about immediately. So when you're in a fresh section, you're also dealing with shelf life issues. So we have mm-hmm. a really, as a fresh product, we have a really short shelf life. So mm-hmm. Sometimes that could offset the higher velocities, which right. we're actually hearing from meat buyers is something they definitely think about, as there's food shortages and, you know, yeah, they just want to make sure that you're the shrink, that, you know, meat buyers yeah. are afraid of your shrink rate. And mm-hmm. That's something we think about. And then in sections like where we are in Fresh Market, it's making sure that the store managers and the people on the floor are comfortable giving the product the correct sticker date so that right. it's not spoiling on the shelf. And, yep. you know, and then the freezer, it's all these different things, making sure yeah. it stands upright. So we have a lot of different factors, and it's, mm-hmm. I think it's a little too early to say, hey, one of these is the winner, but like, I do have to say there's a ton of great data coming out of it. And I do think I used to be like you, really stressed about where we need to be. And mm-hmm. now as a young brand, I see it as, you know, with each store, we're conducting a mini experiment. And yeah. right now, you know, with each store, we can do, there's positives and negatives in each right. section. And how do we leverage those positives to have a better experience? So like in the freezer, We can put stickers on the door, for example. You mm-hmm. can't do that in an open refrigerator. And the refrigerator, we can be, you know, we're next to you. So people who are shopping for a hummus or sauce, they'll see us. So that's a totally different customer. And then obviously yeah. the meat customer. So then to me, it's, yeah. I see it as like, again, I'm just doing this like giant experiment and A/B test. And I don't feel pressure yet as a younger brand. I think right now these are all just great data points and saying I'm mm-hmm. driving awareness to different people and also, you know,
getting learnings. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great way to look at it. And I remember, you know, we did, you know, we were like, when we first went into Whole Foods, it was like produce hummus or where we are now, which is, it's like an 18 word set. It's like natural meat alternative, plant-based Asian, I think is like in there somewhere. Like it's just, it's like, clearly they built this set when, you know, there was condiments, you know, it was just this whole, it was like a hodgepodge. And, you know, I was always like produce. And candidly, we did the best. I mean, that was our highest velocity. But we really belong, as far as they're concerned, more in this set. Right. And so I think what we learned pretty quickly was, you know, and this sounds really, really simple, but it's really, really true. When you're a new brand and people aren't exactly sure, I mean, you have less of this problem than we do, but people aren't exactly sure like what you are or what to do with you or how you make their life better or why you're worth that extra dollar. The in-store coupon or sign or really nice merchandising is not going to do as much as that digital discovery and awareness is going to do. And if we can build these brands and get people to understand them, by the time they get into the store, they're already inclined. They're going to see us and be like, oh, I recognize that from QVC or from TikTok or from whatever. Which I think is like a very simple thing. And yet for some reason, it feels like very like mind blowing to me lately.
Right. No, I completely agree with that. And I think it's doing it. I mean, I hate to say it's doing it all, but it sort of is. And, you know, like I said, we're trying to find creative ways. And I know you and I have talked about creative ways mm-hmm. to drive people to, you know, our products in the store, whether it's collabing with other brands in both the digital and real world, mm-hmm. to put the whole meal together, mm-hmm. to help them or, you know, working with the grocery store and what they think works best, whether that's their circular, which is something I never thought I'd be talking about, but that I am exactly. talking about now. Or, you know, we do demos work for us really well. So yeah. once as that picks up, that's something we definitely think about.
Well, definitely call me when you start doing demos again, because we can definitely go in on those together. That's perfect. So speaking of sort of that, you know, building the brand awareness, you know, it's funny because I really do. I see so many comparisons where we're not necessarily building the business online, but we are building the brand digitally. And I think everyone kind of is, which is kind of nice. I never remember the right quote. Someone will DM me with it, but it's like the Melanie Griffith in Working Girl where she's like, I've got a bod for something, but a brain for business. Like, I always feel like you might be too young to remember Working Girl.
Like, I'm like just dumb with movie quotes. I do love Working Girl, but I'm
so I always think of like our business is like we're very much a grocery store brand, but we play very well with all of like the cool kid tools.
Yep.
You know, and I like that about us. And I'm actually, it's something like I'm proud of and very much like talk about a lot. But how did you right out of the gate start building your marketing channels? Like where did you decide to focus? Why did you decide to focus there? You can't choose them all.
Yep.
How did you play? You know, what do you think have been the big learnings there?
Yeah. So, I mean, these online marketplaces, Hunger, Perfect, Purple Carrot, Imperfect, they have incredibly loyal communities and their customers, you know, you go in a Facebook group and they have our veggie burgers for dinner and you see what they're saying about them, how they prepared them, you know, they're telling their friends. And that's been like the most awesome, like rewarding thing. We get emails from their customers saying, hey, I got my veggie burger in my Imperfect box. So good. You know, this is how I prepared it. And that's been really cool to foster, to leverage that community. Mm-hmm. Another thing we did, and this is maybe, I don't know if other people have done this. We have used, I don't think we've figured out TikTok, but we're consistent on TikTok. We have fun on it. We have two interns who just graduated from college who have now become best friends and make TikToks using our burgers and they make recipes and follow awesome trends and do that. Obviously we are on Instagram. We collab with our other brands and keep that going.
Hard to build on Instagram right now though.
Yeah. Yes. No, it's just, it's more like, I hate to say like checking the boxes, but
Someone called it a really good, it's like the sign on the door.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's like, hi, this is our store. These are our hours. This is what we do.
Exactly.
You know, you need to be there, but it's you're not going to grow organically.
Yeah.
There.
And we're staying away from too much paid media right now. What we are doing, I think, is interesting. It's similar to like a social nature program, but focusing more on younger target demo. It's a program called Aisle.
Which we're doing that.
Okay, awesome. So
we just signed up, or we're just starting.
Yeah, and that's using. I guess that is our first time using paid media, but it's not to drive awareness, but to drive trial. So we're basically making Facebook and Instagram ads with that drive people to a free sample in store. So it's like exactly what you're saying is leveraging the digital community to get them to go to the store, which our store partners love as well. And then to buy our product at the store. And that's been really exciting to see that. And then, like I said, we are doing a lot of the demos and then our QVC, going back to QVC. So everything's all about QVC. So.
I think it's really cool. You know, everyone finds their... I think that's what I love about doing this show. I mean, I like a lot of things about interviewing people, but one of the things is like everyone has their own road, and it depends on the founders and it depends on the product and it depends on like the zeitgeist, and you know, there's no playbook. There's some very fundamental laws of physics that you have to abide by, but kind of other than that, like, you know, I mean, a couple of these channels didn't even exist a couple of years ago. And what works today is probably not going to work in 6 months from now. And that's kind of fun. I mean, it's a little scary, and you have to have your finger on the pulse of stuff. But I think it's, you know, I think it's what key. I mean, I was just talking to Armin before you came on, and it's like, I'm never bored.
Nope.
You know, like, I don't know. I mean, and so what are you, you know, we're in an interesting time. You know, investors, I think that's a little overblown. I think investors still have money that they need to put to work. They're just maybe looking at valuations a little differently than they were a couple of years ago. They might be actually paying more attention to that sort of margin that everyone used to say they paid attention to, but really they just cared about top line a lot. What are you focused on in terms of like, what do you feel like your top priorities are to get yourself in like a really good spot to sort of withstand the next 18 months of all the stuff?
Yeah. So, for us, number one is continuing to double down on those online marketplaces. Those are really good accounts for us to drive marketing and also orders dollars. And then something that's completely new channel, but we think is really big for us is food service. So again, so everything I'm thinking through is two ways. One, obviously revenue, but also, and two is brand awareness. And you might actually flip those. And so working with, you know, strategic investors who also might be in the hospitality space to help get our burgers in places where it's not just the grocery store. And then number three, which I think I'm the most excited about, is how to support in-store purchases through creative means that, like, I think our buyers at the grocery stores are excited about. And when I say buyers, like our category managers, just thinking about different ways to market where in-store and drive those velocities up. So I'm less concerned over the next year of getting in every single door. I just want to really support the ones that we're in and we're working with. And then, you know, like I said, growing food service, I think we're in a very interesting perspective or place where we can both be the veggie burger for plant-based restaurants who have burgers that taste like meat, or the veggie burger at burger restaurants if they don't have a burger on, if they don't have a veggie burger on their menu. So both of those.
Or if they do and they want an actual veggie burger.
Exactly. So So that's what's fun for me. And like I said, these like online accounts, just continuing to work with them, because for us, they're
the nut.
They're the nut.
No, I mean, I think that it's, that's the other part of this that's really fun. Like, you know, I was talking, I mentioned him. I think I mentioned Miguel almost in every single episode. It's like scary, but he was talking about how Cholula got to be Cholula, and food service was a huge part of their business, but it was also a huge part of their awareness building. So, you know, having that bottle of Cholula in the middle of the table just became their thing. And it was the thing that caused the flywheel. So, I mean, I think, you know, food service doesn't work for everyone. Branded food service is hard, you know, but it for sure makes sense with a veggie burger, which is really fun to think about. And it's interesting too, like earlier in the conversation, you said that your competition was beyond an impossible. And your competition is not other veggie burgers, which is kind of interesting if you think about that.
Right.
You know, I mean, just talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I won't say that's the case in food service. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that,
right?
Because I think there's different attributes. But yeah, so what we think of ourselves as, again, we are targeting the same consumer that Beyond an Impossible targets, which is someone who's trying to eat less meat. So in that sense, we are the same. We consider them our competition. This is also like our, gold star or whatever of, you know, standards of, you know, where we want to go. And I think like from like a brand awareness, sales and positioning point, these brands did a really great job. And like I said, we are saying to the person who's trying to eat less meat, here's another option. And I think right now, that's why we consider those our competition.
Yeah. And also, I think you just, I now totally get it. Your point in a way is you don't have to think so much about where you want to be merchandised in each store. You just have to say, put us next to them.
Yep.
Exactly. Which is, that's actually huge, because we used to say like, just put us next to Follow Your Heart, wherever that is, like just put us next to them. Now we don't do that as much because it doesn't actually translate everywhere. But for you, that makes so much sense. So that's why at the end of the day, they're more of a, you're just looking at those numbers because you're sharing shelf space and you just want to out velocity them. And that makes total sense. Okay. Last little bit before we go. you know, this is your time to just say, this is the advice that I want you to hear from someone who is 18 months to 2 years ahead of you, or who's in it with you and is still slugging it out. What do you wish someone had told you? What would you like everyone to hear who's listening?
Yeah, so a few things. I think, at least for me, and I know this may be different for you, but like having co-founders has been integral in my success. So having an internal team that I can rely on and share the wins and the losses with and push me when I don't think I can go anymore has been really important for me. At the same time, and, you know, surround yourself with people who know what they're talking about, not too many.
Right.
I think it gets overwhelming, but at least someone. And like the third piece of that is just do something, make a decision. And I think this is the biggest part of it. Do something, make a decision. Don't just get overcome with fear. Like things aren't black and white, and that's really hard for me to understand, but like, there's never going to be, I mean, you always, if you make a decision,
there's usually not like a right or wrong.
Exactly. There's never a right or wrong. It's just like, I think a lot of people get stuck in the, like, I have this idea, I don't know what to do with it. Like, make a landing page, like sell it at a bake sale. I don't know. Do whatever that next step is. Because that's like the only way you're going to move forward. And that's been really helpful for us. The last thing I think, especially as a woman that like I've gotten a lot better at, and I struggled with at the beginning, is to trust myself. You know, I think it's really hard sometimes to do that, especially when you're new to an industry. And you know, everyone else seems to be giving different advice, but really you got to believe in yourself and your own capabilities. And that's been like the most rewarding when I see myself having more confidence in doing that. And just not, you know, listening to those around me, but also knowing that
but not
I'm
too
capable.
Many. So. I think that's my new favorite quote is like, surround yourself with people who know what they're talking about, but not too many, which is the truth, because like, you know, I just shared with I had two very, very capable, smart women who know exactly what they're talking about, give me almost categorically opposite advice.
Yeah. You can go crazy.
And you can totally go crazy. So here's to nobody going crazy. Haley, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for
coming
having me.
We will get these fun veggie burger sauce partnerships off the ground.
That chimichurri sauce is so good.
You know what I love? I love the red burger with the tahini.
Yeah.
Or is it the purple?
It's
purple. Yeah, I love the purple.
It's really
one.
Funny, I have to say, hearing people's like ideas of the color of burgers we have, because like some people are like orange, some people are like yellow, some people are like red, some are purple, and I'm like, whatever, as long as it's in the rainbow, I'm
good. Long as it's in the rainbow. But I mean, those two together are very, very good. Yeah, I mean, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
Yeah. And Armin, as always, thank you for engineering the show today. A couple of notes. I'm going to be away for, I think, the next 2 weeks, but I will be back on June 6th with literally like a legend. A couple clues. She's been in this business for, I think, 30 years. She does not have a food product. I'm going to leave it at that. But like my idol, I think, out of everyone. And mostly because, to your point, Haley, because she really, really trusts herself. And there's no ambiguity.
I think I know who it is, but I'm going to.
Beautiful to watch. Yeah. I mean, just in case she cancels. She's a busy person. Anyway, all of you who listen and send me notes and like it and all of that, I really appreciate it. This is for you. So I will be back in a couple weeks with another episode of In the Sauce.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org /subscribe.